It's the Shooting USA Podcast, back at you again on iTunes and on Podbean. And I've got guest Mike Irvine.
Guest. I qualify
I
as a guest.
Guest.
I like that.
I misspoke.
Does that make me a repeat guest? Because we did this last week together.
Yeah, I would prefer the term co-host.
Well,
I think that's more accurate.
I'm always a fan of the term co-host.
There you go.
Let's roll
there
with
you
that.
Go.
I like it.
I'm going to, though, bring in our guest.
That's right.
Producer, Tier 1 Media producer, Mark Schaefer.
Mark.
And I am not a co-host, nor do I want to be called a co-host, but guest is excellent. I like that a lot.
Yes, you're a guest of the podcast this week.
And happy to be here.
We've dragged you down the hall into Mike Irvine's office, and that's where we're doing this week's podcast. And primarily because I spent a good deal of time yesterday cleaning my aquarium, and I still haven't gotten my canister filter to quiet down. So,
fortunately, the podcast equipment will travel as
right.
we continue to bounce back and forth between the two offices to record these.
You'll be happy to know the aquarium looks fantastic. We're just waiting on the canister filter to become quiet.
Nothing's better for a podcast than an aquarium they can't see. But it is beautiful.
Well,
seen it. I can
think
verify
radio.
That.
Think radio. Think radio. Okay.
Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are? We know who you are, but everyone listening doesn't know who you are. And I'll use the term briefly.
I'm one of the producers for Shooting USA, and I work with you and John and do pretty much the same kinds of things that you do in terms of going out and doing stories, interviews, and writing. I just don't appear on TV except in very rare circumstances, which is of great benefit to our viewers because I'm one of those people who is better left behind the scenes.
Now, some of the things that Mark regularly produces and writes that regular viewers will know, and that is the History's Gun series. Mark writes every one of those. Mark is our guy who we send to End a Trail. Mark has done several stories on Wounded Warriors and their rehabilitation. We watched a new one of those today. But the reason that Mark is our guest today is because coming up tomorrow night, mm-hmm. Outdoor Channel, new episode of Shooting USA. This is the big one, the $100,000 Shotgun Grand American Challenge, and Mark is the producer of that. So, Mark, tell us a little bit about tomorrow night's new show.
Well, it's a show that I think people will really enjoy watching. There's a lot of excitement, some drama, a lot of build-up to the last segment in the story when someone walks away with a $100,000 check. Obviously very big in terms of the number of zeros, but it's also one of those gigantic 4.5-5 foot long checks, 3 feet high.
Everybody likes
so
a
it's
big a, check.
Yeah,
like a big
so
check.
It's a big check in more ways than one. The $100,000 challenge is the culmination, really the final event of the ATA, American Trap Association Grand American. And many people who are familiar with trap shooting know about it. But for those who don't, the Grand American is almost a two-week-long shooting competition that for many, many years was in Vandalia, Ohio, but is now in Sparta, Illinois, at the World Shooting and Recreation Complex there, which is truly the most remarkable shooting venue I've ever been to. There are 3.5 miles of skeet and trap fields there. And then off in the back, there's a very large, a couple of very large sporting clay courses and bays for cowboy action shooting and many other things. But primarily, this is a venue for the clay target sports. And, you know, you just can't imagine literally seeing the fields go over the horizon there, but the skeet and trap fields do indeed go over the horizon.
And so, they shoot all year long at this particular complex, but the Grand itself, this two-week match, is really, and Mark elaborate on this, the granddaddy of all shotgun shooting in this country. This is as big as it gets if you're a shotgun guy.
It is. There were about 3,400 registered shooters there this this year. And over the course of the, as I said, nearly two-week competition, many, many different matches for people of lots of different skill levels, for men and women, for experienced shooters and those who are less experienced. But they literally shot more than 3 million clay targets in the two-week period. And one of the centerpieces of ATA competition is handicap trap. And without going into too great an explanation of this, basically you begin shooting trap at 16 yards from the trap house. Handicap trap, you begin shooting a couple of yards farther back. And as you get more experienced and get older and prove yourself very proficient at it, they move you further back. So if I, who you guys have seen me shoot trap, I'm a terrible trap shooter. If I were to go up against someone who was very experienced and could hit often 100 in a row, he'd be shooting from 27 yards and I'd be shooting from 18. So I have a distinct advantage there.
And you mean, and by yards, you mean your distance to the trap house.
Distance to the trap house. And there are people of all different skill levels in between, and theoretically by moving the best shooters farther away from the trap house, farther away from the targets, which are flying at 40 miles an hour roughly away from you, it kind of evens the playing field. So
that's neat. That is a serious draw for this particular shooting sport. You have a number of things working for you in terms of immediate recognition of a hit in the form of the bird breaking. You've got it scaled now so that all shooters on all skill levels can theoretically play on a level playing field. And I think that plays into the just absolutely enormous number of participants. And I think I want to go back to that point because we watched a show today produced around the AR15.com Rockcastle Pro-Am, and that is the biggest, in terms of attendance, the biggest multi-gun match of the year. And they had 530 shooters, and that's a big deal for a multi-gun match.
Yeah, that's huge for a multi-gun match.
But that's peanuts compared to what they're doing in terms of turnout for this shotgun match.
Well, the ATA matches around the country, there are several regional grands. The Grand American is the one in Sparta, Illinois, but there are six or seven others around the country, and many of them draw well over 1,000 shooters to the regional competitions. But at the end of the 2 weeks of competition at the Grand American, there are 9 people who have qualified in these various handicap matches that they have, and those 9 people have qualified to compete by virtue of winning their handicap event in the $100,000 challenge. And then at the point when the challenge is about to begin, literally just a couple of minutes before the challenge is supposed to begin, they draw the name of one more shooter out of a barrel with hundreds of names in it of all the people who have competed in, I think it's 4 of these handicap matches over the course of the 2 weeks. So one person who didn't qualify basically wins the lottery and gets a chance to compete from his or her normal handicap yardage distance for the $100,000 challenge as well. So it's really an exciting event. Men and women can both qualify. And one woman did qualify this year, but she chose an option which was new this year at the Grand American. They had a second challenge, the $50,000 ladies challenge. And that, as the name implies, is all women. Women and men can both qualify for the $100,000 challenge. And that's a one check, winner take all, $100,000 prize. In the ladies competition, there were 3 prizes of $25,000, $15,000. And $10,000 for first, second, and third.
Those are some pretty good paydays.
Unprecedented elsewhere in the shooting sports. Where else can you win 5 and 6 figures? Nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't exist. It's fascinating.
Well, it's really an amazing thing. And I think the ATA would tell you that they're thrilled that they have this competition going on each year and this kind of prize money, because it does attract a lot of people from around the country to come and compete at the Grand American, and it keeps them there until the final day because there is a qualifying match on the absolute last day of competition. So one person will qualify on the last day of competition and make their way into both the $100,000 and the $50,000 challenge. So this is all really by virtue of the fact that there is a family, Bill and Leanne Martin. They're from Utah and spend a good deal of the year down in Tucson as well at a shooting complex down there that Bill loves to shoot trap at. But they are the ones, because they love the sport so much, who put up the money out of their own pockets for this, $150,000. They make other large prize donations at the Grand American as well, but there's no question that the $100,000 is the biggest one. And then this year, for the first time, they have the $50,000 ladies challenge.
Fantastic. So you took that in the direction I was going to try to guide you next. And if we haven't mentioned as a sidebar, Mark definitely likes to write long scripts, and now we know Mark likes to talk too.
Well, Mike likes to talk too.
Mike and Mark both.
Fine, we all really kind of enjoy talking.
You had some apprehension going into this podcast that you weren't going to be able to carry your weight in terms of talking, and let me assure you, you're doing a very, very good job of it. But that was the direction I was wanting to steer this, was towards the Martins. And the year that I attended the Grand for the $100,000 shoot off last year, in total donations, the Martin family were being recognized for somewhere in excess of $500,000 for the year. Unbelievable.
Yeah, these are people who love the sport of trap shooting and who love not only the competition, but who love the camaraderie of it. And if you've never been involved with ATA Trap, it's really fascinating to go to the Grand American and see, you know, dozens of motorhomes and fifth-wheel trailers, more than dozens. There literally are hundreds of them. And it's really a whole culture of people who travel around, who love the sport, who, you know, enjoy the friendships, the camaraderie that they built over years and years with other people who enjoy the shooting sports and enjoy clay target shooting, trap shooting. And so I think it's in large part, yes, they want to build the sport. They want to support the competition. But I think the Martins would tell you, if they were sitting here, they've told us that they really love the people in the sport as well and want more people involved in it. And this is their way of trying to get more people involved, trying to bring people in by offering some sizable prizes that may attract some people to the sport who haven't been a part of it before.
I think it's fantastic.
And I would say that that number of money they're handing out is a good way to get people involved.
Yeah, it really is. I think that the ATA would tell you that they had a lot more people there on the last day this year and the last couple of years since this began than they're accustomed to. It is the third year for the ATA Grand American $100,000 Challenge. The first year it was won by Devin Harris. Many people know Devin. He's works with Federal and is well known in the shooting industry and in the shooting sports. The second year, it was won by a 13-year-old boy from Alabama, an eighth grader, who went up against literally some of the best names in the world of trap shooting, including a couple of Hall of Famers, and a 13-year-old shot 50 straight. The second year of the competition and won it all. I'm not going to tell anybody who wins it this year, but there are people who are relatively new to the shotgun shooting sports and have just succeeded through their natural talent and hard work through the handicap system and qualified. There are a couple of those, you know, sort of grizzled veteran types who are familiar names who are in competition. It just makes it a very, very exciting event to watch when you see these people competing. Some of them are there very, very serious. Some of them are there kind of having a good time with it, not very confident of their ability to win. So they're just having a really good time with it. But the competition is really terrific out there. And the end result this year was as interesting as I would say the last 2 years have been in its own way.
Let's talk a little bit about the people, and we won't give anything away. That's what, you know, Wednesday night, Outdoor Channel, Shooting USA.
That's right.
You can see it all there.
Prime time.
But we have 10 total competitors, but the one I want to hear about is, you said this earlier, there's one that's a random draw, and it can be anybody from the field. So this one person is very much sort of the average Joe of the crowd. What? How does it work? The name comes out and, you know, go grab your gun and get to the firing line? What is that like?
It's very much like that. As I said a few minutes ago, if you compete in four of these individual handicap qualifying matches over the course of the 2 weeks, your name goes into the barrel, and they draw it out. They stand there. The grandstands are packed probably with 2,000 people who are there for this event. Most of them are there anticipating that they're going to be spectators, but a few are hoping to have their name drawn out. This year they drew a name out of the barrel for both the $100,000 challenge and for the ladies' $50,000 challenge. The man whose name was drawn, his name was Fred Lewis, and Fred has been around ATA for a long time, but by his own admission, you know, usually, you know, is not one of the greatest shooters at the Grand American. Maybe shoots 19 or 20 out of 25 in a typical round. He was very, very excited to have his name drawn. And a woman who was a retired college professor from Denton, Texas, had her name drawn for the ladies' $50,000 challenge, and she was as excited as you might imagine. So it's really fun to see this because everybody who competes in a number of these events during the couple of weeks has their chance to have their name drawn out of the hat, and you know, they have as good a chance, I guess, as anyone else of having, you know, of being the last person standing, so to speak, and walking away with the big check.
Very interesting. And you said something really interesting in that about Fred. Fred's a guy who breaks 19 of 25 clays, and that makes him, you know, not at the top of the game. People that aren't into this may think, well, 19 of 25, that's pretty good. But if you're going to be a top dog in this game, you basically need to be perfect, correct?
You have to be perfect or very near it. A lot of the handicap events were won with a score of 99. Probably half of them were won with a score of 100 out of 100. So, you know, you're not likely to get there by winning one of the handicap events unless you're shooting nearly perfect. And there was one person who qualified with a 98, and he said he was sure when he finished his round that there was no way that he was going to make it, but it just so happened maybe there was a lot of wind that day. The clays were flying a little different than people were expecting, but he ended up getting in with a 98. He had to have a shoot-off with some other people who scored 98 as well. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you nearly need to be perfect to win a handicap event at the ATA Grand American and to qualify.
Something new that they did this year for us that we hadn't seen was including and using the orange crush targets.
Yeah, White Flyer has these, and people who are familiar with the sport recognize them. People who maybe are not as familiar with the sport but saw some of the Olympic competition in trap and skeet will recognize them. They are the same size and the same weight as a normal clay target. It's a disc that's probably, I'm going to guess, 3 3/4 or 4 inches in diameter. I'm afraid I don't remember off the top of my head. But they have put a thin film over the top of this, and underneath that film is some orange powder. And this is a great thing for the sport in terms of the spectators who are watching it. It doesn't really change the characteristics of the way the target flies through the air. You still have to be a great shot and be on that target to break it. But if you're sitting back about 100 feet behind the shooters up in the grandstand, it's really nice to be able to see this little puff of orange dust when that target's broken and know for sure that it has been broken. Or if it isn't, if you don't see the orange puff of dust, then you know that it wasn't. And it just makes it a lot easier for the spectators to sit there and keep track of exactly what's happening. Because sometimes a shooter might just break a small piece off of a target, chip it or something like that. And, you know, the judges may be able to see that. But if you're further back in the grandstands where the spectators are, it would be very difficult to see a chip like that. But when you hit an orange crusher target from White Flyer, you know it. The puff of orange dust lets you know exactly how well that that shooter did on that target.
Well, in addition to the people spectating there in person, it makes a world of difference for television.
Oh, it really does. It makes our job so much easier. The targets are, you know, terrifically more visible on TV with that little cloud of orange dust when the target breaks. So, yeah, it's great for the spectators in the stands, and it's going to be a lot of fun for our viewers to watch because there's just a much more evident break when they hit the target. Yeah.
Very nice.
Which is fun for everybody. That's even fun as a shooter. I've shot a few of the Orange Crush targets in my life. Obviously, nothing as serious as a $100,000 shoot-off, but it's just fun as a competitor when you get to bust that big puff of orange out there.
You know, for me, I think probably the Orange Crusher target would get away just about as easily as the normal ones do.
Well,
because if I get half of the 25 targets that I've shot, then that's a really pretty good round for me. This is not an area of high skill for me. So, yeah, the Orange Crusher gets away just as easily as the rest of them do for me.
You said it, the targets fly the same. So if they fly the same, Mark, they fly the same.
They do fly the same.
We're talking earlier about the scores, and we're looking at guys who are winning at 99 out of 100, 100 out of 100. I'm curious, a day all by itself, at the end of 2 weeks of shooting, with 2,000 people watching, television cameras on them for the first time, and $100,000 on the line, do these scores hold up? Are these guys still able to perform? Now, don't let the cat out of the bag, but what are we looking at here? How much of a pressure cooker is this for people?
Well, it is a big pressure cooker, and there are some very surprising things happen. Rather than give away what happens this year, I'll go back to last year when, as I said, there were a couple of grizzled veterans out there on the line who qualified with perfect scores to get into the $100,000 challenge and then missed one or two of their first 25 targets. Well, at the end of the first 25 last year, there was a college student from the University of Kentucky, and this 13-year-old eighth grader from Alabama who were left. And he ran 50 straight, and so he broke his first 25 in round one, came back, shot a perfect score in round two with 25 more. And the other fellow, his name was Keith Parrott from the University of Kentucky. Keith missed a couple, so he ended up with a 48 out of 50. But the really funny thing, there was one fellow named Harlan Campbell, who's a very famous name in the world of Amateur Trap Association shooting. And I was up in the stands while this was going on, and there was one fellow there who goes, you know, the Harlan Campbell train is rolling. He was breaking target after target after target, and then somewhere around 21 or 22, he missed. And, you know, the crowd was just stunned. So I think the pressure of shooting for $100,000, and you know, Harlan admitted it last year, you know, the pressure of shooting for $100,000 will get to you. Somehow, I guess this 13-year-old who won, either he put it out of his mind or he just really just wasn't, you know, as aware of what $100,000 is all about as we grown-ups are, but it just, the pressure didn't seem to affect him in the least. He was as cool, calm, and collected as anybody I've ever seen in a shooting competition.
There's a great expression that is, he's too young to know it's hard. Right? That's pretty much a sum up of what happened last year.
I think that's exactly right. And he didn't even seem all that excited when it was all over, as if, you know, it just didn't really dawn on him yet what he had done and what $100,000 might mean in terms of a college education or something like that for him down the road.
I remember his father making that comment to the camera, though, that he just paid for his college. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Which I'm sure is what every 13-year-old would think when they grasped that they had $100,000. I'm sure that young man went right to college with that money. Right.
Yeah, that's the first thing that that would cross my 13-year-old's mind, and I do have a 13-year-old, and I can imagine video games, skateboard, more skateboarding, going to the movies, but I don't think he would, you know, instantly, his mind would leap to, oh, my college education is paid for. I don't think he'd go there.
Let's set the finish of this up real quick, which is, you said that somewhere around 21 or 22 last year, Harlan missed. Now, they shoot these in sections of 25.
Correct.
So when we're talking about target number 22, 23, we're talking about that putt on the 18th on Sunday at the Masters. That's what I can compare this to. That's very much on these competitors' minds. It's one thing to hit targets 1 through 5, maybe even 5 through 10, 10 through 15, 15 through 20. But if you're 20 for 20 and you're five targets away from putting yourself in the driver's seat of $100,000, I bet you can sit back and watch people start to shake, start to sweat.
You'll definitely see it in the television program. We had a number of cameras at various angles shooting the competitors, and you could see some of them, you know, they'd begin to mount the shotgun, get it ready for their shot, and they'd go, they'd stop, they'd take a deep breath, they'd lower the shotgun, then they'd raise it up again and go ahead and call for their target. The expressions, the pressure, it's clear on these people's faces, for the vast majority of them anyway, what's at stake. And, for $100,000, that's going to change most people's lives at least a little bit. There may have been a few competitors out there that $100,000 was no big deal to them, but by the looks on their faces, it was clear to me that for most of them, the $100,000 meant a lot. And the bragging rights mean a lot as well.
No doubt.
The bragging rights of winning this, you know, you've got the best of the best at each Grand American who qualify for this. And it's very, very prestigious in the end to win it. And so I think that for some of the competitors, at least, those who have been in ATA competition for a long time, that part of it is perhaps as important as the $100,000 challenge.
Mm-hmm. I know this is the highest paying day in, forget ATA's year, in the shooting year. But for the ATA shooters, is this the biggest day? Is this it? Is this Super Bowl Sunday for them?
It is. This is a new addition. As I said, it's the third year that this has been going on. So the whole Grand American is like a nearly 2 week long Super Bowl, but now that this competition exists for the $100,000, it's really taking those nine people who have won the top events over the course of 2 weeks and putting them head to head. So yeah, you're taking the very best of the best and putting them head to head. So there's no doubt that this is now the Super Bowl of trap shooting, and by virtue of the size of the payday, I mean, it's arguably the Super Bowl of the shooting sports. They give away $150,000 cash in a matter of about an hour, and that doesn't happen anywhere else in the shooting sports.
Certainly does not.
No.
It's exciting to see. And there is a real personal story behind each of these people. They, in most cases, have family there watching, and that's one of the things that you and your style as a producer, you really excel at, bringing the personality and the family aspect to these stories. How well did that work this year? Because I know it worked famously last year.
Well, it's fun that you mentioned that, and While the other videographers are focused on the competition, I have a smaller camera, and I'm running around the grandstands hollering, you know, does anybody have a brother, sister, father, mother, daughter, son out there on the line right now? And so I try to hang close to the people who are watching the event, who are rooting for one of the competitors, and trying to capture their reactions as we go. And it's a lot of fun to do that. I think that to be able to edit, you know, to intercut the reaction of the fans, particularly the, as I said, the relatives or close friends of the people who are on the line, really adds to the fun of the story. And you get some very, very interesting reactions from the grandstand when, you know, when people either succeed or sadly fail. As I said, the one fellow last year said, you know, the Harlan Campbell train is rolling, and then all of a sudden it was, oh.
Whoops.
You know, so that fellow was very, very surprised. But we have some of that again this year. We worked the grandstands, and people shoot in various squads. So sometimes we were standing with other competitors as they were watching after they'd finished shooting or before their squad came to the line, getting the competitors' reactions as the competition went on as well. And I think that adds a lot to it. It makes it a lot of fun. It makes it a lot of fun for me as a producer when I'm covering the event and interacting with those people up in the grandstands and, you know, who are not out on the shooting line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's worth pointing out for everybody who's listening at home, for Mark, John, and myself, as being part of the media, we never root for any one person, and we certainly never root against people. We are impartial. We are there to cover the story, and we want to see everybody do well. But there are certainly moments when you get swept up in the emotion of what's happening in front of you, and you can't help that. And this match, this shoot-off from start to finish, has got to be like that.
Well, it really is. We spend a lot of time the day before the match and earlier in the day of the $100,000 challenge getting to know the people who are in the competition. I interviewed all 18 of the competitors who qualified over the day of and the day before the match. Tried to find out a little bit about them, what makes them tick. Some of them are retired. Some of them are high school students, some are college students, you know, some are, we met a fellow who owns his own shooting venue up in Iowa. He was one of the competitors. So, you know, you get to know these people, you find out a little bit about them, and you don't necessarily root, as you say, Mike, for or against anyone, but I hope, you know, that people who watch at least have a little bit of a sense, as I did after the time that I spent with these people, a little bit about who they are, a little about what makes them tick and why they're excited to be in the competition, because before the competition actually begins, that's part of our coverage as well, is introducing you to the competitors and letting you know a little bit about what they think, what they do, how excited they are, and why to be a part of the $100,000 or the $50,000 challenge, as the case may be.
I think just about anybody who listens or watches the shows participates in some form of a shooting sport and can envision, let's say that this weekend's club match, and one of the guys at the club match all of a sudden gets the opportunity to shoot that club match for a, let's face it, for most of us, a life-changing dollar figure. How incredibly exciting and how much just unbelievable pressure would be involved in that proposition. And I think that's what's exciting here is think of going to the Handgun Nationals, and instead of shooting for a place at the prize table, you're shooting for better than a year's salary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's absolutely, it's one of those things that when you apply that dollar figure to any physical undertaking, it just becomes something totally different. And it really, it gets to the root of who these people are and what they're made of when they're up there doing it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Some of them, the $100,000 is really intimidating. Some of them, it doesn't seem to be. For a few, I think the most intimidating thing is when the TV camera and the microphone are in their face.
Yeah.
they would rather let their shotgun do their talking for them than be interviewed by a TV producer.
But we do have that effect on people.
Yeah. Right? Well, I try to be pretty non-threatening and make people comfortable because I know they're already feeling a lot of pressure from the competition that they're facing. I don't think that they need to feel too intimidated by the guy who's asking them questions.
Yeah. Outstanding stuff.
This is going to be great. I can't wait to see this show.
Yeah.
This is going to be
a lot
of fun.
It's a neat one.
Well, I'm glad to hear you guys say that. I think it's a lot of fun, too. I enjoyed putting it together. There's a lot of suspense and tension that builds, but I think you also get to know a lot about why these competitors enjoy shooting trap, year round, not just for the $100,000, but
right.
Why it's fun, why the sport is fun, why the people in it are so much fun and really lifelong, important lifelong relationships are built when these people travel around the country from match to match. And we all know about how wonderful the shooting traditions, the shooting sports can be, and they're passed from generation to generation. But really, I think I see that at this event as much as I've seen it in any other, where the friendships are really lifelong and lasting that are built. And that's a huge and appealing part of ATA trap shooting as well.
That's cool. Good stuff. What's next for you? What's the next project? What do we got going?
Well, I think the next project is probably the one that we looked at a little earlier. Those of us who work here in the office together looked at earlier, and it's a story, a couple of parts that I did a couple of months ago. I went down to North Carolina to Academy, which is a well-known company that does security and security training, mm-hmm. police training, things of that nature, provides security in countries around the world for Americans who are overseas. But they sponsored an event with HAVA, Honored American Veterans Afield, mm-hmm. and had what they called National Family Day at the range. And that was a really wonderful and exciting story for me to cover, too. There were 150 wounded veterans and family members who came out for a day and enjoyed some entertainment, enjoyed a chance to get out on the range and shoot again. The kids, they had set up an airsoft range in one of the training areas at Academy, where normally, police officers or military people would be training. And that was a really exciting event, watching these veterans, some of whom had not shot a gun for a year or two because of their wounds and their injuries. One fellow came literally straight from the hospital to the range that day, to see their kids out there shooting the airsoft guns with highly trained instructors. That was really an event that left a huge impression on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I'd encourage people to keep an eye and ear out for when that's going to air.
You bet. That's actually December
19th.
19th, yep. Mm-hmm. Just before mm-hmm. Christmas.
That's a show that we just previewed collectively as a company as it's being rolled out of the edit systems and being prepared to be delivered to the network. And fantastic stuff there. I mean, there are a couple of stories in that about wounded warfighters taking the shooting sports and making it a therapeutic endeavor. But in the case of HAVA, they're a company Inside the Shooting Industry, that's a nonprofit that takes and makes it possible for these guys to come out and try shooting. And it's guys with injuries of all descriptions.
Yeah, there were people who had lost limbs. Some of their injuries were less visible. There were a few people who told me that they were dealing with PTSD, mm-hmm. you know, some delayed stress syndrome sorts of injuries as well. You know, I guess the one thing that I took away from that more than any other, as we talked to these wounded warriors, each one of them kept saying something to me, and that was, thank you for listening to our story. Thank you for listening to our story. And I think that it was very important for them to get a chance to maybe tell someone who wasn't a part of their family, or maybe their doctor or their closest friend, you know, what they had gone to. But what it also meant to them to have had a chance to serve. And in many cases, some of these wounded veterans are still serving. Mm-hmm. We met one fellow who had a prosthetic leg who 9 years after he lost his leg in Iraq is still on active duty.
And he's a paratrooper, correct? I mean, he's still making jumps.
He was, and he's now part of the Army Golden Knights demonstration parachute team.
Unbelievable.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty stunning to me. He said, it may not be as much fun as you think to jump out of an airplane with a prosthetic leg. And I thought, I wouldn't have really thought about fun as necessarily the word to describe that. But he was an interesting guy. There were many, many interesting stories there, and one of the most personally moving stories that I've had an opportunity to cover.
That's fantastic. And again, plays to your strength, going to the personality side of these stories, and that that falls right into your wheelhouse. It's fantastic.
Well, I enjoy telling stories about people in addition to competition. So I hope that that's, you know, something that I do well, and I certainly do enjoy telling that kind of story.
I enjoy watching that stuff. Collectively, the three of us are literally staring down the barrel of SHOT Show.
That's right.
Mark, you're a regular with us. You're an integral member of our crew in Las Vegas, because if it weren't for you, we wouldn't know what we have, how much we have, if we have too much or too little, or if we've covered those that need to be covered. And so thoughts going into Vegas after the holidays?
Well, my primary thought is that I need to get a new pair of shoes, because after 4 or 5 days on our feet out there, boy, your feet and legs are really, really tired. But SHOT Show is really exciting for me, because it's not, you know, it's very tech-oriented, very hardware-oriented, innovation-oriented. It's not the kind of story, John, I think you and Mike well know, not the kind of story that I normally cover. Mm-hmm. But, man, I really do enjoy it. And the energy there is tremendous. The excitement, you know, really for those few days, that's Mecca for the shooting industry.
That's right.
You have all the major industry players, all the major companies there rolling out their new products, very exciting things. And I think it also, you know, really helps you understand once again what a great country we live in, and what a great opportunity, you know, we have living here to enjoy the shooting sports, to take advantage of the Second Amendment for our protection, for our pleasure, for our enjoyment, you know, in competitions or hunting or whatever. I think that you can't walk away from SHOT Show not really feeling in awe of what the Second Amendment is all about, and in awe of those men, you know, more than 200 years ago, who saw fit to put that among the Bill of Rights.
Folks, that wasn't rehearsed. That was very genuine. That was Mark just sitting here talking to people.
Yeah, it's just, I just think that it's a big reminder to me every year when I go out there what a great thing the Second Amendment is.
Well, you'd written a couple of pieces for Mike and I to do on camera last season as little kind of little curb pieces, little bumps or whatever in the show, and one of them was what a celebration of the Second Amendment. And it really, ultimately, it is what it that is exactly what it is. It's the culmination of the entire industry that's built around that founding, that right, that mm-hmm. amendment, and it is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is. It's also fun to be there and know, as I said a minute ago, that you're kind of for that few days, you're at the center of the shooting industry. You're at Mecca, and I have a few friends who get very jealous. Mm-hmm. In January each year, when I say, "Well, I'm getting on a plane Sunday and flying out to Vegas for SHOT Show," and everybody goes, "Oh my gosh, I'd really love to go." And of course, it's not really an event for the general public. It's an event for the industry and
dealers
come out. They check out what's new and exciting that's coming out of the vendors and the major companies. So there are a lot of people I know who would gladly be in my shoes.
And that's part of the mystique.
Yes,
it is. This is not a general public show. This is for the industry. This is for the dealers, the manufacturers, the members of the outdoor media to get in there, get the initial look at what's new and what's coming down the pipe. And that adds to the desire, because you're right, Mark. People who do not get to attend this thing just salivate when we talk about it. They want to be there. I think about someone like my father, who's this big hunter and gun guy, and he would give anything to go to SHOT Show. Yep.
Well, we're not gloating here, but it is great to be able to go. And so that's why we go, so we can show people, all of those folks who are good enough to spend a part of their Wednesday evening with us, to show them what's there and to help them see, what is new and exciting in the shooting industry, offer them some ideas about some products that they may like to have. But it's great to be able to go and know there are a whole bunch of folks who would love to be there who can't, and we'll just do the best that we can to make sure that they feel like they're there at the end of watching our TV program.
Well, you'll get the 1 hour special, but in addition to that, we are going to be taking the Shooting USA podcast live to the SHOT Show floor. We'll be doing recordings and postings daily.
That's going to be fun.
From the Smith & Wesson booth, as well as the Bushnell and Uncle Mike's tactical booth. So, we'll be grabbing people as they're coming by. We'll be talking to representatives from companies. We'll be talking about new product. We'll be talking about plans for 2013. So if you're subscribed to the podcast, you'll be hearing it as soon as we're hearing it. And just another way for Shooting USA to deliver the best in coverage in all things shooting.
That's what we do. And we try to get it out as early and as fast as possible. And that's part of the show. When you talk about the television side, it is a ridiculously fast turnaround for a show.
Right.
I mean, we're putting together an hour special. We fly back on a red eye after SHOT Show on Friday home Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. We're all back in here on Sunday. Scripts are being written. Mm-hmm. They're going to the editors. The editors are grinding. By the end of that week, that show is in final edit, which is an incredibly fast turnaround.
Well, we as producers are out transcribing on a daily basis the stuff that we're doing
on
camera.
As we
so
do
we're
it.
Ready
yep.
to prepare scripts so that they can be edited absolutely as fast as possible. And the one thing we're backed up against is the lead time to the network.
That's right.
Those out in the blogosphere and those, doing whatever they're doing in terms of internet, it happens immediately. And that's what we hope to fill with the podcast, leading to our television program, which literally hits air within 3 weeks of us leaving the SHOT Show floor, literally less than 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
It's one of the biggest undertakings in terms of whole company making an episode of the show that we endeavor. So.
It's worth pointing out, especially worth pointing out because I have Mark sitting here and him being a part of this today. For those of you who have seen SHOT Show and have watched what we do, you pretty much understand what John does, what I do, what the boss man, Big Jim, does.
Right.
You can pretty much figure out what the cameramen do.
Right.
You see in the video, that's what they're shooting. I have to paint the picture of what Mark does for us, and I'm going to set you up with a question for this, because Mark is the guy who controls the time. We have to fill a certain amount of time. So Mark is recording the time of everything we do. On top of that, Mark is making sure that we get all of the right shots to fill those things. Mark is keeping us on task. And Mark is also directing you, me, Jim, to make sure that we don't do anything wrong, because it's very easy to flub your words or say something wrong in the midst of these stand-ups with these crowds and in this huge atmosphere. And there's a lot. You know, we're talking 50 to 75 stand-ups over a course of a couple of days.
With no script.
With no script. Everything is ad-libbed. Everything is live to tape. What we do there is what we come back with. So we have very little room for error. So, Mark, what is it like to be the director of two Scoutins and Irvine, two cameramen, over 4 days, making an hour's worth of TV?
Right.
He's smiling. I like where this is going.
Yeah, well, I think he
that was a
go
big
now.
Sigh.
All of a sudden, he's like, I'm sick.
You mentioned directing Jim. I'll step back from credit where directing Jim is concerned.
I think that's important.
Jim doesn't really need much direction. And I'm not sure that I'm the guy to provide it if he did. But there was a time when the show, Shooting USA SHOT Show special, happened without me going along. And it would happen again this year if I didn't go along. But I just think that I provide an extra set of ears and eyes. I listen to the things that those of you who are on camera say. I put myself in the position of the viewer and say, did I really understand that? Or could we say that a little bit better? And yeah, I try to keep us on time, make sure that when we leave at the end of the day, if we have, before the week's out, we have 45 minutes that we need to make sure is filled. I keep track of what is going on. It's not a hard job, but I do think it's an important job, and it makes things a lot easier when we get back here. And a lot of it for me when I go out there, I don't do any writing much on the floor, a few small things. It's mostly a clerical kind of job for me, but I do think in the end we get the show on the air quicker because we're better organized in the field. And but I don't think I'd die alone necessarily. Have cornered the market on the ability to do that. I think you could take some other person out there and do just
so
as
humble,
well.
Isn't
yeah,
he?
You're very
He's
humble.
So humble.
You're downplaying.
This is so humble.
Tremendously, huge downplay. No, it's a critical element that we found absolutely helps us do what we need to do as a group and makes it all just run seamlessly.
Critical would be the word I would use.
Critical is a good word.
Critical
is a good
element
word.
To the process.
No
and I don't know if you guys have looked at the calendar, but we are like. It's less than 50, 45
days
away. 45 days away.
Awesome.
Wow.
Awesome.
Well, it's always fun.
Get busy.
Mark, I know you were worried about sitting here talking to us and having enough to say, but I've looked at the clock, and we have filled an hour.
We're 52
on this
minutes.
Math
whatever.
Isn't the best. But
keep going if you're on your treadmill.
That's why I'm going to Vegas, because your math
bike.
Isn't
That's
the
right.
best.
That's right. You see, this is the importance of having you as part of this. I was off by 8 minutes. That doesn't work in a television show.
It certainly doesn't work if you're using this as your entertainment for your treadmill. You're not done yet, so keep running.
Well, you know what? Pick up the pace and get it done in 52 minutes.
Run, walk, run, walk.
There you go. Just like that. Intervals.
I mean, as usual, we're always looking for input. Who do you want us to be talking to? What do you want us to be talking about? Facebook, shootingusa.com. Hit the email. Send us messages. We had big requests for Jerry Michalak, and we paid off with Jerry Michalak last week. So let's keep that going.
Yep. And let us know. We'll track anybody down. We'll drag somebody out of the office next door. Thank you, Mark Schaefer, for appearing. If
my
need be.
Gosh, you talk about a tough act to follow.
right?
I'm sorry to all you listeners out there that I'm no Jerry Michalak. So
well, yeah, but you're here, and it's your show next week. So this week,
this
actually
week,
tomorrow,
this week,
night,
tomorrow
right.
night.
Tomorrow night. Get it straight, John.
Tomorrow night, Shooting USA, Impossible Shots, Wednesday night, Outdoor Channel. How many times can I squeeze that in?
I don't know. It's important, though.
Yes, it is.
Try it once more.
Yep.
Impossible Shots and Shooting USA, Wednesday night, Outdoor Channel.
That's right. That's good stuff. Well, all right. I think that's what we got for this week.
We'll catch everybody next week. Same time. We'll do it again.
Thanks for inviting me, guys.
All right, Mark.
See you,
thanks.
Mark.